They don't know any Sam Smith songs because there's definitely a lot of puns.
I'm not the only one.
Top Loader.
Dancing in the Moonlight.
That's Top Loader, isn't it?
Achilles Heel.
Is that, I wouldn't know about that. Probably best not to get Achilles Heel, to be honest, with the amount of injuries we've got.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. That's right, it is time for a brand new season, a brand new year of this show, and hopefully a brand new trophy in the Reading Trophy cabinet. We are kicking off the 2017-18 season with a bang. This is our fifth season doing this now, so I think we are officially the longest running Reading FC podcast out there. And if it was your 132nd go round, or it is your first time listening to us, a very warm welcome to you. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetilesden.com, and I'm delighted to be joined this week, as I will be throughout hopefully most of the season. We'll have a bit of a rotating cast along the way. But in the chairs today, the Tilesden's number two, deputy editor Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Am I a veteran yet, officially?
I think so. You were here for number one, weren't you?
I think so, yeah. I'm certainly a stalwart, not necessarily a veteran. I think stalwart makes me sound a bit younger, whereas veteran is, you know, getting towards the older end of the spectrum.
Yep, I like it. And a relative newcomer to the cast, even though you've been on it for the last couple of seasons, assistant editor Mark Mayo. Mark, welcome along.
Yeah, thanks. I'm very much the John Swift of this podcast.
Yeah, bright upcomer. We have just signed you to a brand new deal, so...
Where's my five-year contract?
Well, you know, Johnny, we don't tend to offer contract to the older ones.
Budget's tight, innit? Get some more Patreon campaigns, yeah. And then...
Pay as you play for me, I think.
Exactly that. And Mark mentioned Patreon. I'm going to get it out of the way nice and early so I don't have to mention it again. Thank you indeed to everybody who has contributed to our Patreon campaign. Now, you might hear me mention this a few times over the season. It is basically our tip jar. Now, we are largely an unpaid organisation. We do this because we love the football club and we enjoy talking about it and analysing it and all that. But, you know, we like to bring you a professional output as possible, even though if we do sometimes joke, we're an unprofessional joke of a show. But seriously, we like to produce a nice podcast for you to listen to, and that requires decent equipment, decent software, and all these things cost money. And as much as I like dipping into my own pocket to help fund them, it is much easier if it is a team effort like you guys out there. And I'm so happy that so many of you, month to month, put your hand in your pocket and give that couple of quid. To you, it's a couple of quid. It's nothing. It's a coffee. It's a bottle of water. It's something. But for us, you know, if every single person that listened to this show on a weekly basis gave us £1 a month, we could almost take this thing pro, put it that way. So thank you to those of you who have done so. And if you do want to get involved, it's patreon.com/thetilesden. That's Patreon, patreon.com/thetilesden. And thank you to several people that have stepped up in the past couple of weeks, to Vegard, to Ryan, to Joel, to Derek, to Andy, and plenty of others I'm sure I'm forgetting. I will give you your appropriate shout outs in time. But thank you, thank you. Anyway, shilling over. This is it. This is the starting point of the 2017-2018 season. We've got a lot to cover since that Wembley heartbreak and our end of season show. So let's dive into it. Let's get into our summer recap.
The Tilehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Well, guys, where do we leave off? Where were we on our last whimsical tour through the Tilehurst End Podcast? Where were we in episode 131? I seem to remember something about a penalty shootout defeat at Wembley.
What? Yeah, no, that's gone. Gone? That never happened.
Did it not?
No.
Did I dream this?
I've just erased it from my memory. There's just been so many of them now that it's just... They just don't happen. They just all fade into one.
Are we doing the season 5 classic soap twist of It Was All a Dream?
I think we should.
I'm trying to, but I was watching Sky Sports earlier, and you know they have those montages for like the new season. One of those is kind of split. On the left-hand side is Jan Kermigan actually in tears, and on the right-hand side is Huddersfield lifting the trophy. And I saw that earlier, and I was like... Oh, yeah, that happened.
The only thing that I've seen of said penalty shootout, which I will admit did exist, sadly, although I've tried to erase it from my memory, and I successfully had until we had a little introduction video with one of my bosses at work. It was sort of, you know, ask him anything, you know, get to know him sort of thing. Question came up, oh, you're a Reading fan, are you? Yes. Which is your least favourite playoff heartbreak moment? And they proceeded to show the highlights of this penalty shootout.
Is it exhibit A, B, C, D?
Well, there's quite a few to pick from, aren't there? So, yeah, sadly that
yeah,
was...
Yeah, you're never short of dinner table conversation if someone raises the playoff heartbreak. But it did happen. As Johnny said, unfortunately, we can't ignore it. We did lose at Wembley. We've covered all of that in our end of season show. So if you wanted to know our thoughts on last season, everything that happened there, go back into the archives, and I'll mention it here as well. Over the summer, we have had a few podcast episodes out, interview specials largely. We spoke to DJ Megaparty, aka the PA man at the Mad Stad. I very much encourage you to listen to that. Ollie spoke to former Reading captain Joby McEnough, and we also had the Goodbye Charles Watts show. So we gave Charles, who of course covered Reading via Get Reading and the Reading Post as it was then, for two or three seasons before moving on to Pastures New, we gave him his sign off from the show. So go check all those out in the archives. But anyway, that's all in the past. It's time to move on. I don't know about you two, we talked briefly about getting over it, but for me, I'm still not quite. Are you there? Are you in this 2017-18 mentality now? Are you looking forward, or are you still kind of looking back?
I'm definitely looking forward, although, I don't know, it just seems like this summer has gone by really, really quickly. I don't know whether that's the same for everyone. I think it might, because it's slightly shorter, because the World Cup next year, so obviously everything gets compressed a little bit, but yeah, I firmly am focused on this season now, and you know, starting to look around at what other fans think of their seasons, and you're getting a lot of the transfer business being done, including by Reading, both ins and outs, and yeah, it is suddenly sort of coming upon you, and that's quite a strange thing in a way that you know, I barely, what, 6 or 7 weeks after it was all over, we're just about gearing to get going again.
Mark, what's your mindset with 5 days to go before the big kickoff?
Yeah, I think it'll feel a lot more real for me when I think Hull play Sunderland on a Friday night of the Championship opener. I think that's when it'll sort of kick in for me. But at the moment, it's been a quiet summer. And when it is quiet, there's not been much waiting for deals to be confirmed. It's very much been pop, like one pops up, then the next week one other will pop up maximum. But we've not really had much to focus on or really, you know, think about, because it's kind of the same as last season.
Yeah, well, let's get into the main personnel changes. We'll get on to our pre-season results shortly, but personnel-wise, you know, we have lost a couple of people from that Wembley game. Notably, goalkeeper Ali Alhabsi. He moved on, a kind of an out-of-the-blue move, really, considering he signed this new contract in January, was twice player of the year, and winding sort of down his career. You didn't really expect him to make a move now, but he has gone to Al Hilal in Saudi Arabia. Am I correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, Saudi Arabian team over there. He has moved over there. I think largely, but I understand that they have offered quite a lot of money, so I'm sure that helps. But I think the main motivator behind this move was family. Now, Ali's family is in Oman. He's just had another child to add to his growing family. You know, his brothers are over there as well. So I think he wanted to move and be in a league that was close to home. He didn't want to spend another year away. And you can't really blame him for that. It's a little bit disappointing in the timing. Am I alone in thinking that?
I think it caught the club by surprise, at least, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, obviously the club will have known that this clause was there, and he was just growing a real rapport.
Well, did they? Yapsdam said he didn't.
Well, I mean, well, someone hopefully did know, because otherwise, you know, that's a little bit worrying about the contract we're signing. But, I guess in terms of the relationship with the fans, obviously a two-time player of the season now, and, you know, really sort of growing into that role, not only on the pitch, but, you know, behind the scenes, he was very much the sort of almost the front of that family club mentality that Reading want to put out. And he was that, you know, the gentleman on the pitch and off the pitch as well. And so, you know, it is a bit disappointing, because, you know, when he came here, there were all the questions about the mistakes, and you can't really say anything other than he's been exceptional, certainly for the last 2 years. And, you know, when it is a team that sort of builds from the back, as we do with Yapstam, you know, I think you want that consistency. And obviously, we know that Vito Minone, his potential replacement, or, well, his obviously replacement, has sort of done it at this level and higher. So you'd hope that there won't be too much upheaval. But obviously, building up all those new links with the defence and the trust, etc., you know, it's a big stumbling block.
Yeah, and it looks as if Reading have actually financially lost out on this one as well, Mark. By all accounts, it looks like Alhabsi's gone for around about 800,000. It seems to be the widely quoted figure.
Yeah.
With Minone around about 2 million. So it looks like it's kind of cost us 1.2 million. Now, I was going to get on to the incomings in separately, but I'll just ask now, have Reading upgraded, have they downgraded, or have they stayed the same in the goalkeeping category?
Well, time will tell. With Minone, I think that he's experienced. Can he play the ball around with his feet is something that, you know, you can find plenty of evidence on YouTube that he can't, which is a bit worrying. But then also he's kind of that eccentric. If on Football Manager you've got the eccentricity marking for a goalkeeper, he's got it in abundance, hasn't he? Because he can pull off those world-class saves and he can also concede 8 goals in a game. So I think time will tell. The only thing I'd add on Al Habsi, as you say, we've made a loss on it, and I think that's almost the down note that I'd say as a fan, because when you lose a player that you like and it's, you know, Matt Mills goes for 5 million quid, at least you've got 5 million quid in the bank to think, oh, well, that's all right, then we've kind of made a bit of money out of it. But we haven't really made much money out of this either, have we?
Just to add, I'm not sure Reading fans liked Matt Mills, but...
No, well, yeah.
We liked having 5 million quid for him.
I certainly did.
That's very true. Yeah.
Cheers, Sven. Thanks for that. You know, one of Nick Hammond's many masterstrokes on his outgoings. But no, so, you know, a net loss of £1 million. Manone, I mean, you know, early 30s, not past it by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, you can't say slam dunk upgrade there. Elsewhere, we said goodbye to Danny Williams. Now, this was one we long thought was coming. The club were making all the right noises, you know, talking about him, trying to get him to stay. But realistically, we knew with the high wages that he was on, rumoured, strongly rumoured, £35,000-£40,000 a week, the last Anton Zingarevich contract. We always knew that with our parachute payments ending, unless we won promotion, this was going to be a real tough one to tie down. Sure enough, he moves. Slightly surprising that he's gone to Huddersfield, of all teams. Obviously, they were very impressed with his Wembley performance. So he joins them on a free transfer as well. Gents, anything that you think the club could have done?
No. I mean, you know, Danny Williams is, what, sort of 27, 28. So you'd argue that in terms of his footballing age, he's entering that peak. And simply when you've got the Premier League versus the Championship, I mean, it's an easy decision, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, you'd imagine that Huddersfield will have been able to offer him a far better wage as well, obviously with the Premier League money, but also the fact that their squad wasn't necessarily the biggest with all the amount of loans. So they've almost had to sort of go out and buy a lot of players. And so that, you know, for Danny was almost the perfect situation. He knew that they needed him and really wanted him and would try and move heaven and earth to get him.
Yeah, they spent £45.5 million so far this summer. Just think about that.
Could have been us.
It could have been us spending £45.5 million. Mark, would you have thrown the kitchen sink money-wise at Danny to get him to stay?
Nah, he's sort of, we mentioned John Swift earlier, he's the opposite of John Swift. He's a big game player, but he doesn't turn up necessarily when you're playing Rotherham at home or you're playing QPR away, those sort of games. He doesn't really tend to do that much. And Huddersfield's a perfect match for him. I actually thought after the playoff final that would kind of be where he was going. And we've seen this move not just for last season, but for the last couple of summers as well. We've seen this move in the offing that he's been talking about going to the Premier League. It was always going to happen.
Yeah, again, the only disappointment for me is that we didn't get any sort of transfer fee for him, considering that the investment in total, if you look at the money we paid for him from Hoffenheim plus the wages, I think I worked out last season, I said on last season's show, about £10 million I think Danny Williams has cost us over the lifetime of his contract. And when you actually look at the output we've got for that, was it the best? Maybe not. So anyway, he moves on. I'm sure he'll get a nice round of applause whenever he comes back to the Medeski Stadium. But it's with Huddersfield. I imagine that's going to be in 12 months' time. No, I'm not bitter.
I don't think we'll be ships passing in the night as we go on our way up.
Oh, well, obviously, yeah. Well, there we go. Maybe it's longer.
We'll never see him again.
No. Elsewhere, lots of other departures, but not a lot of incomings to talk about. We'll get into the couple of others that have signed in a second, but on the exit door, it is a long list. Now, we'll start with some of the bigger names. Jake Cooper is the most recent to go. He has joined Mill for an undisclosed fee. We think it's going to be around about £500,000. Not sure. Mill certainly haven't broken their transfer record, which is about £800,000. So he has gone. Dom Samuel, his fellow academy graduate, he's gone to Blackburn for an undisclosed fee as well. We've also lost Niall Keown, Dom Hyam, Tarek Fosu. A slightly surprising name. He's gone to Charlton for an undisclosed fee. Paolo Hurtado, remember him? He's gone as well. Sean Long has joined Lincoln. Jack Stacey, he has gone to Luton. Craig Tanner has gone up north of the border to join Motherwell. And we've also seen Dennis Rackles join Lech Poznan on loan, as well as Denzel Gravenberch. The Grav, he's out on loan as well. He's gone to Rosslare. And completing a trio of loanees, Yaku Meite, he's gone to Socher?
Sochaux.
French listeners, French speakers, I apologise to you all. He's joined that French side also on loan. So looking at that list, again, anybody else? We've talked about Williams now, Hamsey, but anyone else on that list that you're surprised to see go or disappointed?
Not necessarily disappointed, because I think we have this I don't know if it's me, but I have this view that Reading fans think these players are younger than they are. And if you actually look at the age of some of these players, you know, I think someone like, well, Jake Cooper certainly is what, sort of 22, 23. Jack Stacey, again, sort of around that age. Craig Tanner, again, is sort of that 22, 23 age. And so if these players aren't challenging for a place in the first team now, then you sort of have to say, okay, you know, best of luck in your future endeavours, and you've got to try and you know, establish that career for yourself elsewhere, because it's clear that none of these players were very much near the first team squad. And so I think Jaap Stam, you know, if it's him making the decisions, has just sort of said, look, you're not part of my first team plans at the moment, and you're not at an age where you're going to see a significant amount of development such that in a year or 2 years you're going to be near the team. So, you know, you should go elsewhere. I mean, it's kind of similar to Chelsea in that they've just got, you know, an entire team out on loan that are never going to play for Chelsea.
Loan, they're never going to play for Chelsea.
This is what I mean. You know, you look at someone like Michael Hector, you know, I doubt he'll ever get a game for Chelsea. He's just dropped back into the Championship.
Yeah, he's got to Hull, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, that says a lot about his level. So I think this is just very much a case of, you know, these players, obviously we brought them through, and you know, always as Reading fans, you're going to have an emotional attachment to them. But at the same time, you've got to let them loose at some point. And, you know, I think fair play to them as well for taking the gamble on themselves. And, you know, a bit like, you know, Mikel Antonio a few years ago, you've got to say, look, it's the right time for you to go because you're not going to get a chance in the first team here anytime soon. If you go and make it for yourself, then brilliant for you.
I think it's even different to the Mikel Antonio situation, because Mikel had four very good players ahead of him. I think what you look at in this group is that this group have never had a better time to break through into a Reading squad. If you look at the actual quality that is ahead of them, I mean, you look at someone like Jack Stacey and Craig Tanner. I mean, the competition they've actually got in front of them at the moment, I mean, you're not talking world beaters. I mean, you're talking Adey Popper. You're talking Callum Harriott, who's the same age as you. I'm not having a go at those players. But what I'm saying is, if these players were even good Championship players, they would very much be in Jaap Stam's thoughts. Or again, am I speaking out of turn?
No, he's ready for these players to come in, because he bought Liam Kelly from absolutely nowhere and put him in the first team. So it's not like he's predisposed to preventing youth players from breaking into the team. He'll have you, but he doesn't want them. And I can't blame them for trimming out the deadwood in a large sense, because as Johnny says, they're not 18 and 19. If you look back at Robson Kanu, Karachan, they went on loan when they were 18, 19 and did well. I can't think of, you know, Jack Stacey scored the goal for Exeter in the playoff semi-final. Has Sean Long, has Craig Tanner done that much that would convince you that he's good enough for a Championship promotion challenging team on loan at Plymouth?
The destinations, I think, tell a lot as well. If you look at the clubs that these players have ended up at, I mean, you're talking Coventry League 2, Blackburn just dropping into League 1, Lincoln new into League 2, you know, Luton League 2 as well. They're not, you know, we're not losing players to Sheffield Wednesdays, to Nottingham Forest, or even, you know, with the exception of Cooper, who's gone to Millwall. I think he's the only one that's stayed at this level. And we know that Jake Cooper, I think, is more of a style issue for Jaap Stam. I don't think he fits into that mould. And also, out of all the positions there, the centre of defence is probably the one where Reading are actually quite well stocked.
Well, Jake Cooper's also, he went on the tour, didn't he?
So yes.
Jaap Stam gave him a look. And if he had really thought that he was going to be in the first team next year, Jaap Stam wouldn't have let him be sold.
I think Stam said he put the ball in Cooper's court. He sort of said to him, look, I've got nothing against you being here at all, but you know the competition levels and it's up to you what you want to do. So credit to him. He's thrown down the gauntlet to these players, but unfortunately, the likes of Fosu haven't made this step up. Now, whenever this happens, Johnny, you sort of alluded to it, a lot of people are saying, oh, why have we let this person go? They're going to come back and haunt us. You can't just hang on to all these players just on that off chance, can you?
No, and I think, you know, what's often forgotten is these players are people. And, you know, if they want to go out and make a move and try and, you know, if they realise, look, I'm probably never going to get a chance here, they don't want to be, you know, contracted to the club that they know they're never going to play for, and they're going to be shipped out on loan to one place the next year and another place the next year. You know, you want to make a career for yourself, and these players want to make a career for themselves, and the only way that they can do that is if their destiny is in their own hands. Now, I know that that is obviously part of the whole thing about football, is clubs holding the contracts of players, but I bet if you, you know, went out and asked any of these any of these people, would they rather spend 3 years at the same club or just go to one club, then another club, then another club? You would rather stay at one club for 3 years, give it a good go, and try and prove yourself in the same system with the same players around you, not having to, you know, make new friends or settle into new tactical ideas and stuff like that. And so I think, you know, I don't think it's as simplistic as the club should have held on to these as the players have the desire.
Yeah.
To, because the players aren't going to leave if they want to stay here.
No, and it so takes two to tango.
There must have been some element of these players wanting to leave, knowing that necessarily staying at Reading isn't the best option for their career at this very moment.
I think the other point as well to consider is that this isn't just one man's opinion, really. Obviously, Yap Stam has been the man in the manager's seat for the last season, but most of the players on this list have played under two, three, four managers now. And none of them have really been given a run. I haven't even mentioned Aaron Cole, who's been released on that list as well, I should have said. But players like Cole, now he broke into the team under Nigel Adkins, but didn't get in under Clark, didn't get in under McDermott, didn't get in under Stam. Even his own dad didn't pick him. Sorry, Aaron. So, and the same with Fosu. Fosu, has they've had chances to recall him, have decided not to. Dom Samuel made his debut in 2012. You know, he's been one of the, he's made his debut before just about anybody else in the who played at Wembley. So these players have been around the club, they've trained under different managers, and multiple ones have said, no, you're not for me. So if this had been one long dynasty, you know, a 5-6 year reign of a manager, you might have said, actually, I think Stam's wrong. I think maybe he's not rated him. But I think you look at the number of managers that have passed these guys over, and it's about time they've gone. Again, the disappointing thing is you don't know how much money we've got for them, but it doesn't look like, Mark, that we've actually made a whole lot out of this group.
No, I'm not sure there's much money going for you. Obviously, we talk about how young English players have their price banged up quite a lot these days, but that's not the case in the Championship. A lot of these would have gone for probably under 100,000. Certainly the ones that we kind of offered a contract to and then we agreed a nominal fee, like Jack Stacey to Ekfoss, who I can't imagine as much in that. It just depends as to whether the club stuck a buyback or a sell-on clause. That's the only two things that I would really say that there should be.
Yeah. And like, look, every, you know, there's going to be one person that goes on. I'm sure out of this list, well, I'm not sure, but I would imagine there's going to be one player from this list that we sit here 3-4 years from now and say, no, maybe we should have held on to him.
Paolo Hurtado.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But like I say, there's only so many players you can hold on to, especially with the financial climate as it is. We're out of parachute payments. That's going to be a net, I think it's about £7-8 million loss. And you just can't hold on to these players, even if they're only on £2-3 grand a week. That's £150,000 plus the general cost of everything else. So it adds up. And so clearing out a lot of players does free up some money. Where that money has gone, and we've mentioned Vito Minoni for about £2 million. We've also signed Pelle Clement from Ajax. I just like to tell people that we've signed Pelle and then just whisper, Clement.
Or Graziano Pelle.
Yes, absolutely.
Even Graziano Pelle, not necessarily yeah. Pelle. He'd probably Graziano be better than Pelle,
Pelle
at his current age, to be honest.
Yes, so he has arrived from Ajax for an undisclosed fee. And the other big name is Jon Daði Böðvarsson.
That big name in quite a number of senses.
It is absolutely.
Big name in Iceland.
Big Jon Daði.
Literally. Yeah, Böðvarsson looks like a decent signing when you think about it. On the face of it, not so much. But when you realise that actually what we needed more than anything last season was a Kermagant replacement, he might well be that.
Well, that is just it. The Wolves fans we've spoken to very much compared him to a Kermagant. His goal scoring record is nothing to write home about. He finds a net about once in 10 games, I think is his career average. But, you know, you can go read it up on thetalisman.com, search for Townend Böðvarsson or anything like that. It should hopefully come up, or the Wolves view on Böðvarsson. He's rumoured to be about £1.5 to £3 million, depending on who you want to believe, transfer fee-wise. Again, the old-fashioned undisclosed fee was announced at the time, but he's a hard-working guy, wins a lot of balls, strong, puts in a shift, just not great at creating goals by himself. So, yeah, Mark, very, very Kermagant-esque.
Yeah. I just thinking that the undisclosed fee, I don't think we've disclosed the fee in ever, almost. I kind of think that Sean Cummings for 250 grand was the last fee that we disclosed, and that was in 2009.
Yeah, it does seem a bit silly.
One for readers to write in and say,
I'm sick of it. Just tell us how much you've spent on someone. You know, it's, you know, unless you've, well, no, I can't think of an excuse of why you just don't say. Well,
was,
why
was Pelle Clement free, or was that undisclosed?
I thought it was undisclosed.
he still had a couple.
I think it was a nominal fee.
Yes.
He still had like a year, but it's not.
Yeah, exactly. I put it this way. I don't think we've spent seven figures on him.
I think, one of the reasons it might be undisclosed is I think a lot of transfer fees now are, you know, very incentive based and sort of very, you know, over 3 or 4 years and appearances and goals and promotions and that sort of thing. So you can't sort of put a definitive number on how much. Oh,
just say
costs.
It was up to for a fee that could be worth £3 million. That's good enough for me.
Okay,
it's good enough for me. It's good enough for anyone.
We'll phone the new Ron Gourlay. Is it Ron?
Big Ron. Yeah,
Big Ron. We'll phone Big Ron and
make him a friend of the show.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, we'll come on to Mr. Gourlay shortly in News Bites, but. Bodvarsson, Johnny, happy, or is there still work to be done?
I think there's still work to be done. Just obviously you hope that these players turn out to be better than, you know, they've done in previous lives or at previous clubs. But just going on the track record, you can't see that this is going to be the guy that's going to fire us to promotion. But at the same time, you know, we've had other players come in sort of with, you know, not such a good record, and we've sharpened those rough diamonds, and that's exactly what you hope we would have done here. He seems like a Stam sort of player, and so you hope that we can develop him. And like you said in the Ipswich view about or the Wolves view,
yes,
about Bodvarsson, and you know, they sort of said, you know, it's very much a case of just he got off to a decent start and then just faded out a little bit. I think a couple of injuries, and obviously they've been spending silly money on some other people up front. So it might just be a case of, you know, a fresh start, and he can hit the ground running here.
Yeah, you can see how much Stan values characters, Mark, because in all of these players that we've talked about, everything that's come back about them off the pitch and their work rate has been very positive. So even if we're maybe not picking up players with outstanding, you know, smacks you in the face obvious quality, we're picking up the players that, like Johnny alluded to, are going to work hard to fit into that system.
Yeah, I think the thing we found about Clement is that when he played under Stam, he did quite well, but when he played under the other, like, young Ajax coaches, he wasn't so impressive. And if that means that he can only play under one manager, then it may as well be the manager that we have that he's playing under. So it's horses for courses, and is that kind of what we've been doing last season? Last season was a bit more whoever we could get, wasn't it?
Well, it was a bit more of a revolutionary summer, wasn't it? Because of the new system and the new manager, it was very much bringing in players to play a certain type of way. This seems to be more evolution rather than revolution,
yeah,
the transfer policy.
Definitely. So we've just got to wait and see. With, I think, Mannoni and Bodvarsson, like we say, Clement, I don't have very high expectations for. That wing spot seems to have quite a lot of players and not much quality at the moment, so we'll see which of them can pop up and actually do something.
Yeah,
I think the other thing is, just very quickly, if you believe that we were a team that, you know, finished in third and deserved to finish in third last year, then it's not like we do need to have a revolution. We just need a couple of pieces that, you know, when we're playing three games in a week, we can chuck someone else in, rotate it. If someone's off form, then you can bring someone else in. So if this is a squad that we do believe, even having lost Al Habsi and Williams, deserve to finish third last year, then all you need is, you know, a couple more pieces that won't upset everything too much, and potentially, you know, you can make that step.
Yeah, I'm sure Much is pretty upset because, you know, we haven't kept him around either.
Mm.
Has anyone kept him around? Is he still at Palace?
I think so.
He scored in a pre-season friendly for Palace.
No way.
Yeah.
What, was like the actual first team?
I was going to say, was it like against Tame Town or something?
Crystal Palace 11.
Yes.
Gateshead, that's
against Staines. Yeah. Anyway, so that has left a slimmer squad than maybe we'd have liked, and that is partly down to injuries. The injury list is pretty eye-watering. When going into the season, we've got Callum Harriott, who is going to be out at least for another month or so after the surgery he had towards the end of last campaign. Gareth McCleary's picked up a knock, have no ETA on his return. He's not played a minute in pre-season. Joe Vandenberg is carrying an ankle problem. Bodvarsson went off with a bit of an Achilles problem in our final pre-season friendly. Joseph Mendes has got a problem as well. Stephen Quinn, unfortunately, again, is dealing with issues. Tyler Blackett's got an injury problem as well. Roy Behrens. And the biggest of all for me, Jan Kermigan. He's got hip and groin problems that's required major surgery. He is going to be out until around about October at the earliest. So plenty of work for the physios, Johnny.
Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable, really. I mean, you look at that, and that is just about a first team, or certainly a lot of players that you would put in the first team. I mean, the likes of McCleary Kermagan. Blackett, to an extent, had a very good year last year in places. Vandenberg as well, when he was played in the right position or he was on it, he was very good as well. So it is slightly worrying. Like you say, I mean, in terms of the players we're bringing in, they've almost got to hit the ground running because we want to get off to a good start again and prove we haven't got any sort of hangover from the playoffs. And the pressure is really going to be on that side to start delivering early.
Well, Mark, what that's left behind, if we look at the lineup from Reading's final pre-season friendly, they played Vitesse Arnhem at Wickham on Saturday. The lineup was Manone, Gunter, Abita, who went off at half time, Thiago Alori, Liam Moore, Joe Vandenberg, who went off after 24 minutes for Liam Kelly, George Evans, John Swift, Pella Clement, Adrian Popper, Bodvarsson, who went off at half time for Sam Smith.
If Bodvarsson, Mendes and Kermagan are all missing QPR, who starts up front?
Well, Stam has said
16-year-old Danny Lowe that starts up front.
I think it's time to get a load of that.
Heard it here first, and not for the last time.
It's him or Sam Smith, and I don't know any Sam Smith songs because there's definitely a lot of puns.
I'm not the only one.
Top loader,
dancing in the moonlight.
That's top loader, isn't it?
Achilles heel.
I wouldn't know about that. Probably best not to get Achilles heel, to be honest, with the amount of injuries we've got.
No, I don't know whether he would. Stam's post-match comments suggested that Bodvarsson's injury wasn't serious, that he will be in contention. I imagine he does seem the type of player that will play through the pain barrier. So hopefully get him in. Otherwise, yeah, you're right. Danny Loader, I mean, he scored, he burst onto the scene. Was it three or four goals he got against QPR?
He got four. Last was a penalty. A perfect hat-trick for the first three, wasn't it?
Absolutely. He's a player that there's been good, positive whispers on. Loath to talk anybody up from the academy anymore given what's happened in recent years, but does seem to have some good buzz about him coming up through the ranks, but still very young, 16-17 years old. He played in the first double friendly, which was a 5-2 win over QPR, whilst another 11 beat them 2-1. We then went on, I can't pronounce half of these names in pre-season, we'll come on to this, Johnny, because we don't seem to be playing teams, we just seem to be playing collections of letters. I'm going to give it a go though. Reading 0, KV Kortrijk.
Kortrijk.
Reading 2. Okay, how are we going to go over this? Jenklebli. They're Turkish. A collection of letters that starts with G. They're from Turkey. Yeah. We drew 2-2 with them.
Good Scrabble score there.
Absolutely. Reading 0. Sparta Rotterdam. I can get that one. 0-0. Reading 1. Bruges.
It's just Circle, isn't it?
Is it Circle Bruges?
That's how they say it in Belgium, isn't it?
Circle Bruges. Anyway, we drew 1-1 with them. And then, as mentioned, a 3-2 defeat to Vitesse at the weekend, who went 3-0 up against us before we pulled late goals back through a swift penalty and Popper. Popper, Johnny, I think one of the few players that's actually coming out of pre-season with a fair amount of hype behind him. I think he's done quite well. I think he's contributing to a goal about every hour.
Yeah, I mean, well, he only came in January, didn't he, really? And, you know, at that stage with us flying, it was, you know, like I said earlier, a little bit difficult to kind of upset the apple cart and prove that you want to come in and you're instantly going to make this team better. So, you know, with a full pre-season, getting to know everyone, obviously it helps that we don't have many players out at the moment, so he's almost being forced onto the pitch. But, you know, you'd hope that it does pay off for him this season, and we didn't really get to see much of him last season, so you can't say straight away he was a bust or he's going to be, you know, the second coming of Jimmy Kebbe. Certainly not in height terms anyway, he's about half his height, but maybe in terms of pace and trickery.
Well, we've got history for where wingers have struggled to make that instant impact. You mentioned Jimmy Kebbe, didn't pull up any trees after arriving in January when we were in the Premier League and went on to have a pretty good Reading career. Bobby Convey as well, yeah. Arrived, and it took him into his second season before he really got motoring.
Could say the same for Makhanov almost.
Yeah. Steven, he took Hunt a while after Brendan left to really sort of hit his stride.
He was making noises though, wasn't he, Popper? Wasn't he coming out saying that he wanted first team football?
I think so. I mean, he was obviously a regular starter for years playing Champions League football. I don't think he came over to England to sit on the bench in the second tier.
Yeah, maybe Stam sort of heard that and said, well, go on then, this is your chance, because...
Well, he's got it.
The space is open.
Well, no McCleary, no Harriet. He's sort of been operating sort of on the wing with Clement on the left-hand side as well. Mark, anything from those pre-season games against the collection of Scrabble scores that stands out for you? Anything to worry about?
Honestly, no, because I haven't got a clue what went on. They were played in Holland behind closed doors, and, you know, the coverage of it was relatively limited, and the camera angles for all the highlights were from like below the turf, so it's quite hard to really know what went on. And yeah, the scorelines are irrelevant, and it's not until 10 games into the season that we'll really know how good it is.
Johnny, anything for you?
No, not particularly. I mean, you know, like you say, you can't really tell too much into pre-season, so you know, I'm not too bothered. I think the only thing is that we've used this time to sort of develop the style, and yeah, we are, I'm sure that we're going to hit the ground running against QPR, hopefully.
Yeah, the only thing for me is it's nice to see some of the younger players like Loda, Rinomata. Mm-hmm. Is that we're saying his name? I'm terrible with these pronunciations. Again, we don't hear them, so I don't know how to say them. And Sam Smith, I think I've got that one right. Nice to see them getting a bit of involvement as well. So hopefully one or two of them, like we saw with Liam Kelly last year, can break through. But again, just don't get too hyped about any of them. You know, it's great that Danny Loda scoring four in a pre-season friendly, but just let him do his own thing and come through when the time is right. So fingers crossed we get a lot of these players back from injury. It was disappointing for me that a lot of these friendlies weren't over here. We didn't seem to have the traditional friendlies. You know, we weren't playing the Didcots and local teams like that. Why weren't we playing someone like a Maidenhead? It's a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, it is. And it's, well, I mean, just in general, I think it's a bit of a strange decision to do the entire thing behind closed doors. I think, you know, obviously the fact that we went to the playoff final can't have helped in terms of everyone else, you know, almost got a 2-week march on planning their own friendly. So I think we almost had to do that in a sense. And obviously, with the pitch being relayed, I assume they wanted that extra sort of week and a half to give the Madstad, you know, that little bit more breathing time to lay in the turf. And so, yeah, it's been an odd pre-season, hasn't it?
Yeah, £1 million re-turf of the Masters. Isn't it just usual end of summer, we'll put a new top layer down? This is a ground up. I actually got to see it. It looked like something like a dirt bike track. It was completely gone, not a shred of grass anywhere. So, and I think that is the first time since the summer of 2006 that it's been completely revamped. So fingers crossed, we shouldn't see the Desert Strike-esque style in the corner where there was more sand than grass.
They should break it in with the London Irish game.
Oh, why not?
That'll get the grass rolling.
Real test of it. Well, in years past, we have this argument, it seems to come around every couple of years. When the pitch is good, the rugby doesn't really affect it. I know it doesn't help it massively, but it's never been a problem. It wasn't a problem for us winning the league. It wasn't a problem for us anything. It's just, unfortunately, when the undersoil, or, you know, I can't speak on the technical terms, but when it gets degraded over the years, it's just one of those things. So anyway, they'll be moving out in a year or two. So anyway, that just about wraps up the pre-season for what has actually happened in terms of major on-pitch matters. We'll get on to some transfer rumours, some off-pitch issues and much more. That is coming up in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Guys, it wouldn't be a summer without rampant transfer rumours. And this summer is no different. Mark, I think Reading have been linked to every single person that's ever played up front for anybody in the Championship. It's almost like we've gone into the Championship Manager database, gone to the little filter setting, and just ticked SC.
Yeah, plays football, plays striker. Yeah.
Role for any role up front. Amongst the names we've been linked with have ranged right from the likes of Ross McCormack to Nelson Oliveira to Naki Wells, and just about everybody else in between. Of the names in between, which I'm not going to rattle off because I just cannot be bothered to give them oxygen, but Naki Wells and Oliveira, there does seem to be, well, there is substance behind them because Yapstam has said there is. He says that Wells is a name that is on their shortlist and that they were trying to make a bid for Oliveira. Now, it was quoted at the time when the Oliveira rumours were out that the place for Norwich, in case you don't know, that it was around about £8 million, £8 to £10 million Reading were going to throw at this. We had it from club sources that was absolute nonsense, but Stan was confirmed there was interest. So whether it was just the fee was nonsense, that seems to be where the confusion comes from. So we were interested in him, Mark, and in Wells. Either of those two excite you?
Oliveira was a class player. I think he was probably one of Norwich's best players last year, and I think Norwich fans would agree with me on that. As for Naki Wells, I mean, we've had these players before, haven't we? We've had Vidra play for us, and I've described these players, you know, like Jordan Rhodes and Stephen Fletcher and all those sort of players that aren't good enough to be in the Premier League but are also capable of scoring 15, 20 goals in the Championship kind of exist in a purgatory state, don't they?
Very much like Lewis Graben.
Exactly, yeah. They're never going to score, or they're never going to get their real chance in the Premier League because they're just not quite good enough. But at the same time, in the Championship, they are worth quite a lot of money. And I like Naki Wells, but I'm not sure I would splash 10 million quid on him.
Yeah, Johnny, either of those two floating your boat?
Well, at least if we sign Naki Wells, he couldn't score against us, which he always seems to do. Nelson
Own goal.
Sorry?
Own goal, don't rule it out.
Mm. Nelson Oliveira, like Mark, I think he's a really, really good player. I'd really like to see him here. Sonny Oluko is another name.
Yes, that, from Fulham.
Yeah, that wasn't mentioned. And again, that interest has sort of been confirmed as well. So, I mean, you can kind of see what Stam is getting at here with sort of like the trying to get a bit of pace up front, which is something that we didn't really have last year, certainly with Jan Kermigan. But, you know, like he says, financially, I'm not so sure that we can't compete because we've seen, you know, we've signed a centre-back for £3.5 million, Thiago Alori. So I certainly don't think, we're totally hamstrung financially. But at the same time, you're not going to come out and say, yeah, we've got £10 million, here you go, let's have him. Especially with someone like Naki Wells, who, you know, like you said, I mean, if this is a player who Huddersfield get up to the Premier League and they say, we don't want him, I sort of don't think we should be signing that sort of player, because if we exist to get into the Premier League, then we're almost certainly going to do the same thing when we get up there.
I'd
as
have
well.
Him for £1 million, but he's not
going to go for £1 million though, in this climate. No, he's never going to go for that.
I mean, it's the sort of thing where you could, you know, give him a cheeky call at 8 PM on deadline day and say he doesn't want to play for you. Let's have him on loan. Mm. And I think
is that not worse though?
If it helps you get up, no, because then you're not financially burdened by him.
Very true.
Next year or the year after. And, you know, you get to that same situation where you say, well, I mean, you know, Naki Wells might do better for us in the Premier League, but if a team that's just gone up to the Premier League and is one of the favourites to go down doesn't want him, then you don't imagine that we're going to be any different, you know?
I was quite surprised that they're not going to play him in the Premier League.
Mm, well, I said they've spent over £45 million this summer.
Mm.
They have bought a lot of talent into the club, and he wasn't playing every week even last season. He was sort of,
he wasn't even their top scorer last season, was he? It was Kachunga, he was their top scorer. So I think he's one of those players who, you know, would be decent / good at Championship level, but, you know, ultimately I'd be happy if he was here, but I don't think we should be sending silly money on that kind of a player who, you know, might get you up to the Premier League, but isn't a long-term investment. Whereas I think someone like Oliveira still has the room to improve and, you know, can prove himself at Premier League level.
Would you endorse, though, Reading spending, let's say it will cost £8 million to get in there, would you endorse that as a transfer fee?
For Oliveira?
Yes.
Yes. Because I feel, you know, like I alluded to earlier, if you believe that this squad was good enough to finish third last year, then potentially all you need is one or two pieces. And yes, you know, it's money that Reading traditionally have never spent. It would, you know, more than double our transfer record. But if the owners have that amount of money, if Yapstan wants to sanction it, and if you believe that that is the player that would take us over the top, then absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, every transfer fee is a gamble, whether it's £1 million or whether it's £8 million. But if you believe that that £8 million player is going to get you the £100 million next year, then it's a no-brainer.
Well, let me kind of twist that around a minute. If you kind of, with hindsight, you look at how well Jan Kermigan did last season. Last summer, if you had the opportunity to buy that Jan Kermigan for £8 million, would you put £8 million in, knowing that he was going to get 20 goals and be your best striker by miles, basically?
No.
Was he worth £8 million to us last year?
No, because he didn't. Well, I mean, he didn't get us to the Premier League.
If we'd have gone up, then he would have been there, wouldn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, with all of these things, there's the idea of a resale value, and I mean, you're never going to recoup £8 million on Jan Kermigan. Whereas I think a player like Oliveira,
yeah,
being sort of 23, 24 as he is, still has that time to improve and time to develop. I mean, and who knows, with the way football's going, in a couple of years he could be worth £20 million.
You do say that though, Johnny, but you do have to, obviously, you know, we are basically talking about gambling for promotion. #gambleaware. first of the season.
First of the year.
If you're playing the Tyler Sten podcast drinking game, hashtag drink aware.
40 minutes or so?
Yeah, we did quite well.
Nearly made it to half time.
But, you know, you say, oh, well, he's got a resale value. If he flops next season, say he signs for Reading and he scores two goals and gets a massive ankle injury, Reading are on the hook for £8 million, plus presumably what's going to have to be a pretty big contract to get him here. Let's just call it 30 grand a week for 4 years. So, again, we're talking Williams money. We're talking about another 8 to 10 million on top of that. So, £15 million commitment. This is a Reading side that have no longer got parachute payments, that have to abide by FFP. And the last set of accounts said we lost 16 million even with those parachute payments. Now, have Reading, should they be spending that money? It's all well and good saying, okay, well, if the new Chinese owners have got that money, but ultimately, it looks like it will be Reading on the hook for it. So should we be financially responsible and, you know, do we take the financially responsible route and say, no, we're not playing those games? Or would you just say, well, you know, we'll take that gamble? I think you're advocating for the gamble.
I wouldn't call it a gamble so much as a calculated risk, which is all that this is.
I'm going to take you with me to the casino next time I go.
No, but, you know, like I said, I think, you know, rather than sort of spending, say, you know, 2 million or 1 million on three or four players that might, you know, get you somewhere in the future.
You're going for one big buy.
If you firmly believe, and I do, that this is a team that is that close and we were one penalty away from the Premier League, then potentially that is the one player that can take you over the top, isn't it?
Quite possibly. Mark, what would you do? Would you spread the money around? Would you say, okay, say the transfer kitty is 8 million from this point on, would you say 3-4 players in at 2 million each, or would you go for that big marquee man?
Well, yeah, I do kind of agree with Johnny in that sense, because when you have, you know, you look at the team at the moment, do we need three more attackers? I wouldn't say we need three, because, you know, we've got five wingers basically already with three strikers. That's not really going to fit in. And if we're going for this evolution over revolution approach, one player fits in with that better than bringing in five Pelle Clements. You may as well have one really decent player who can actually match Jan Kerm against goal tally, who can, you know, play in a number of positions, can adapt to a number of formations. Those sort of invaluable versatility sort of markings that you don't always get with the stats.
Yeah, it is a very, very tricky one. I can completely see both sides of it. I just err on the side of financial caution until I really know what these Chinese owners have got behind them, what they're prepared to do. We know that the debt in the club is, you know, they loaned the club, what was it, 100 million. So, you know, it shows it's a loan at the end of the day. It wasn't a gift. So I'm just a bit nervous about Reading going out and really blowing huge sums. Well, not blowing, but spending huge sums on players before I really know the financial ramifications. But the man who will be in charge of sealing these deals, should we make them, we've mentioned him earlier. We've called him Big Ron. No, not that Big Ron, the disgraced former TV pundit. We're talking Ron Gourlay, the former chief executive at Chelsea. He's arrived this summer because long-term CEO of Reading, Nigel Howe, has moved on up. He's joined the EFL board. So that created an opening. So now the person directly underneath the Chinese owners is Mr. Gourlay. As mentioned, he's been at Chelsea. He's had experience. He was there when they won the Champions League. Obviously, title wins, deal with massive sums and massive transfers. So I'm sure it'll be thrilling for him to get that deal of Jake Cooper out the door to Millwall for £500,000. You know, when you sign Shevchenko.
Got to start somewhere, haven't
you? Torres. I think Torres. I don't think he signed Shevchenko. But, Johnny, anything to read into Ron's appointment?
No, not particularly. I mean, obviously, the sort of most of the transfer dealings now are sort of dealt with by Brian Tevreden. So you'd assume that, you know, Yapstam and Brian Tevreden are sort of happy enough with this appointment. And it seems to be, you know, it seemed last year that both Stam and Tevreden were on the same page and obviously made very good signings on the most part, very shrewd signings with not a lot of money. So you'd hope that, you know, Ron will evolve, not revolve them.
Do you think this is a good appointment, Mark? Or do you think this is maybe a man who, not out of, almost under his depth, if that makes sense to you, that he's come sort of too far down the ladder?
Well, it's up. Yeah, again, it comes down to the roles that we're thinking that he's going to do. Is he going to be involved in transfers? You certainly expect him to be involved in budgeting. and all of those sort of things. And a man who's been under Roman Abramovich's rule for the last 10, 15 years may not know how to budget, because it may not have been a relevant factor for him at his previous job. So, yeah, it's a different game, obviously, in the Championship. And I kind of actually thought, when we saw John Swift getting put on a five-year contract, that maybe that was his doing. And that's the sort of thing that you got at Chelsea, was long, young players, almost no matter of their ability, getting put on long-term deals. And if he had a say in that, because we've never really done five-year contracts before, then that might be the type of thing that he's in charge of.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good appointment in terms of he's got that experience of running a big club. He's obviously got some good contacts in the game, and it does sort of lift the prestige of the football club. You know, he has got the experience. You know, he can phone up another chief executive and they remember he's been at Chelsea. He can go to sponsors and likewise. So I think for the bigger profile of the club, I think it's good, because I think it raises the whole club up. No disrespect to Nigel Howe, but Gourlay's got that bigger reputation and can hopefully sort of pull us up commercially with him. Remains to be seen. Obviously, he's only just been in the job a number of weeks. I don't think we've even really heard from him. So hopefully we'll get a bit more from him in the next few weeks. Ron, the offer is open to come on the podcast, by the way. You know, come on down to Woodley. It's very nice. But you mentioned John Swift, Mark. New five-year deal for the midfielder. Great to get him tied down. Liam Kelly also penning a new contract this summer as well. So it looks like the club are getting their house in order, certainly with the players that are here at the moment. They don't want to get into these Danny Williams situations anymore. They're getting these deals done.
And Yap Stam.
And Yap Stam, of course. Forgot to mention, this was so long ago, Yap Stam signing a new two-year deal as well. So that's sort of ending any speculation on his future as well.
Yeah, it all bodes well. The thing is, you know, Williams, the silly season market we're in, might have been worth that £10 million in the transfer market if Huddersfield really wanted him this summer, and he had 2 years left on his deal. So it's worth taking part in that and making clubs. If you want John Swift, then throw £12 million quid at us and we can talk. But if you've got a 1 year left on his deal, then they're not going to do that.
I think this is the first time we've ever handed out a five-year deal, Johnny. Has it gone to the right man? You're biased, so I probably shouldn't ask you.
I think it has, and I think we saw, and certainly in the first half of the season, what he could do. I think in the second half of the season he burnt out a little bit, but what you have now with Swift, with Kelly, with Moore, with Ilori, is potentially a real, and Evans as well. If you think of that middle five, that is potentially a very good Championship core for the next 5 years, and that certainly has the potential to perform in the Premier League as well. And now that we've got all of those players on sort of here for the next 3 years in theory, that is something that, as long as no one comes in and buys them, you can start to build around and not worry about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great. I like the fact they're being so proactive. They're not waiting. They're just getting these deals done. I think you're right. I think the type of players they're going to as well, they're no-risk players. You can give them these big deals, and you know, again, we talked about resale value. These players are always going to have value. So great. Good to see Brian Tevreden and Ron, if he's involved as well, and Yap, all getting these deals done. And Yap's damn staying as well. Obviously, you know, we sort of, as mentioned, glossed over it at the top, but that's the big one. There was lots of speculation. Would he move on in the summer? He always said he was happy here, and he's put his pen where his mouth is. He signed that deal. So hopefully he will be here for at least the next couple of years and beyond, you know, when he's leading us into the Champions League and whatnot. A couple of other little bits and pieces. One person who has left the coaching team is Stephen Reid. He's moved on to pursue new projects. Again, fairly vague. He was brought in by Steve Clarke after he hung up his boots as a player. Had a couple of years here as a coach. But he's moved on. Any thoughts on Stephen Reid moving? No?
Well, Stam said that he wants to get an English member of coaching staff in as a replacement. So it's kind of like the squad management sort of role, isn't it? Like the go-to between the players and the coach. So in that sense, it's a little bit of a disappointment. It seemed like he was quite popular, and I'm sure they'll find someone decent enough to replace him.
Yeah, I agree. And just talking about off-the-field issues as well, two things to bring up. Number one, Godspeed, the drummer. He's not died or anything, but the Medeski Stadium drummer has hung up his... What?
Drumsticks.
Drumsticks. He's hung up his drumsticks. He's resigned after, I think, more than 10 years banging the drum at the Mad Stad. He's decided to hang it up. So, you know, Goodbye to you. I'm sure he'll still be there as a fan. But
that's a Tyler Stent interview waiting to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, your experiences as the drummer.
The wacky experiences.
So the club have actually said if anybody wants to step into his place, get in touch with them. So, yeah, if you fancy being the drummer, if you think you can do a better job, get in touch with them. And on the whole thing to do with the club and what they've been doing off the scenes as well, you may have noticed if you're a season ticket holder, you've got a shiny new member card dropping through your letterbox, and it comes with a whole new Royal Reward scheme. Now, this isn't replacing season ticket points or anything like this. It is just an extra thing the club have introduced to give you a chance to earn points and spend them for doing club-related things. So you get points literally by pretty much doing anything. If you turn up into the concourse early, you get extra points. If Reading score a goal when you're in the stadium, you get extra points. You buy something in the concourse, you get points. And the whole idea here is that you can then trade those points in for to be in prize draws, or to bid on club merchandise, things like that. Any thoughts on the scheme, Mark?
Yeah, a couple. Firstly, are we involved? Are we getting every 10 listens to a podcast, you get a free home ticket?
Not yet.
I think that should be,
I will put it to the club.
Long-term plan, shouldn't
yeah,
it, really?
I think so, yeah.
And I think it should work the other way as well, whereas if you leave the stadium early before last minute,
you lose points.
Then you lose points as well. Excellent. I think that's totally fair.
Johnny?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like anything they can do to enhance the fan experience is a good idea. Although, you know, in practicality, how it's going to work out is another matter.
Yeah, well, look, it's extra value for doing nothing. Basically, it's not like you're getting different things for doing these things last season. I only see it as a good thing. I think it's good. I think it encourages you to, you know, spend your money on the concourse and, you know, buy merchandise. And it sounds like you get some cool things in return for your points. Obviously, it's a brand new system, so there's probably going to be bugs and kinks in it. But, you know, we've spoken to those at the club over the past couple of years. We're very lucky here at the Tyler Stent. We've got a good relationship with those at the club. And Adam Benson, who was on this show last year, if you've got thoughts, suggestions, ideas, the club are very happy to hear from you. They really want this to be a two-way street. It's not a, here's this thing, you will like it or lump it. It's be in dialogue, get in touch with the club. If you don't know the email address, if you go on and look at their customer services on the website, drop them an email. If you want to get Adam's email address, just drop us a line and we'll pass it on to you. They're very keen for dialogue. And that goes back to the point on the drummer as well, is that the club, the overall impression I've got from speaking to them is that they are keen to boost the atmosphere and the experience of fans, whatever way they can. They just need the fans to help out. It's, you know, I think we all agree as fans now, we don't want too much shoved down our throats in terms of you will do this, you will sing from this song sheet, you will smash this happy clapper against your leg when the teams come out. But at the same point, you know, the club do want a good atmosphere, and we want a good atmosphere as well. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn there. So it's just up to us as fans, us as a three and as a wider fan base, Tyler Stent listeners, everyone out there. If you've got some ideas about something you think might boost the atmosphere, if you've got an idea, you know, you want to create a singing section or you want to do something, you want a new banner, anything like that, get in touch with the club because they are keen to help. They're keen to support, whether it's, again, through distribution of ideas, whether it's even financial. You know, if you want to expand the drummer to include a trumpet and a trombone, not that I'm endorsing such things. Well, whatever. Get in touch. You know, if you've got enough people that want to get it done, get it done. So again, this should be a football club. It's not just a business. If you've got those ideas, get in touch with the club. Get in touch with us and we'll pass things on. Again, it's up to us to do it. You know, the club can only do so much. If we want to improve the Medeski Stadium atmosphere, we've got to do our own bit as well. So,
two words, safe standing.
In the future, I'm damn well hopeful that will be done.
That's what you need.
But in the short term, it might take something else. Anyway, yeah. So that's just something to keep in mind throughout the whole season, not just as we go into the campaign as well. So anyway, that just about wraps up News Bites. So there's probably other little bits and pieces that have gone on over the past 2 months that we may have missed. But don't worry, if it's anything vitally important, we will come on to you. We'll come on to them. That sounded rather dodgy. I'll leave it in anyway because, you know, it's pre-season. I've got to warm up the podcast. So we will come on to all of those issues as the season progresses. We will have this show going out weekly. We'll also bring back the podcast extra as well. I'll have more details of that in the next couple of weeks. A brand new co-host to replace Charles, who has moved on to Pastures New. But for now, we'll move on to your portion of the show. It is time for the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right, mailbag time. And if you are listening to the show for the very first time, this is the bit where we turn it over to you. All you have to do is send us an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, drop us a tweet to @thetarlhurstend, preferably using the hashtag TTE podcast, or go on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. If it's got a YouTube channel, which Mark here has been diligently working on over the summer, you may have seen our kit release video that you did.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
nice.
And some season previews as well. We've exactly. tried to do it in like really important places. So the players preview was from the Players Lounge, and we did one on Stam from the dugout and that sort of stuff.
Very nice. So head over to youtube.com/thetarlhurstend for that. Right, without further ado, let's get into your thoughts. Starting with Russell Parker, who says, third season in a row, I've been worried about the fullback situation, yet there's not even any rumours of assigning any. Thoughts? Johnny, do we need a new fullback?
I don't think we do. I mean, the fact that we just signed Chris Gunter to a new long-term extension kind of proves it.
Yes, he was one I forgot to mention in Newsbites. So thank you for that.
I think a new 3-year deal, so certainly it seems like Stam's happy with him. Abita, hopefully he'll be the next one to be signed up. I think he's only got 1 year left, and Blackett is a decent enough backup. I don't think, you know, we're in a position where we can have two players for every position. But I think Blackett's a decent backup, and if you know, if you'll believe the hype about 10A Watson, then you know he's the second coming at right back as well. So I'm not too worried. I think it's, you know, it's not the strongest in the championship, but it's by no means the weakest in the championship.
Yeah. Matt Castle says, are you surprised we haven't looked to do more business with Ajax besides the deal for Pelle Clement? One player from three windows? Mark?
No, I wouldn't say I was surprised, because Ajax have hundreds of affiliate clubs all over the world, and I don't think that we're very high up on their priority list.
Yeah, and also the amount of players that are going to be prepared to swap the potential, you know, European football and the top division in Holland for coming to the Championship isn't going to be high. And those that will probably be on a decent wedge as well. Louis Burton, sure, we'll discuss it anyway, but who goes up, who goes down? I predict Villa, Borough and us, obviously. Burton, Bristol City and Ipswich to go down. I'm not going to... We were going to do a full season preview, but my argument on this one, and I hope out there this doesn't sound like a cop-out, but my whole argument with this is that until the transfer window is shut, it is really difficult to know just where clubs stand, because the squads we see now are probably going to change massively over the next 4 weeks. So looking at that list, certainly teams like Villa and Borough are very strong. I mean, you can look at... It's all the usual suspects are going to be strong for promotion, and all the same suspects to go down. Any, we'll do it very quickly though. Any gut hunches on your three up and three down?
I think if Borough don't win the championship, then their manager should be sacked.
After spending £25 million on strikers in 1 week.
Oh, I thought, yeah, £35 million in total. Fulham are an obvious candidate. I don't quite understand the love around Aston Villa, aside from the fact that they've signed a geriatric John Terry. And I mean, I'll give a nice little forward plug to our Championship in Their Own Words piece, which will be coming out over the next week. And you know, that sort of really gives you a feel. You know, I've sort of compiled them, and there's a lot of fans who sort of think 21st will be good for us this season. And one of those is the team that we start off against, and that's QPR. So, you know, there's an equal amount of optimism and pessimism. It isn't always you go into a new season thinking you're dreaming of the promised land.
Mark, any hunches from you?
I think Borough, the team that I was looking at, started the season, Fulham as well. And I agree on Villa. I don't think they'll be that good. Leeds could either be incredible or flop. Wolves could either be incredible or flop. And you can apply the same two words to most of the teams in the Championship.
It is an absolute cluster F.
I mean, you just look at Huddersfield, Fulham and Reading, what they were predicted to do last year.
Exactly, exactly. We will have a lot more thoughts on this. As I said, towards the end of the window, we'll do some real solid predictions. But for now, it's even like doing individual Reading predictions. You know, chances are the top goal scorer at the club isn't here, and so on. So if you look at players that have signed traditionally after the season starts, even last season we had Liam Moore and Tyler Blackett. You've had the years when we've signed Casper Gorks and Adam Lafondra. The year we signed Chris Armstrong, Ian Hart. So keep an eye on that. I did an article on, you know, why I'm expecting a playoff hangover, and that was one of my key points, was that we don't tend to get the business done early because we're at the bottom of the food chain. We have to wait for those other deals to be done. So come the end of August, we'll do a full championship preview. We'll look at some of the early starts and indications and go for it. But yeah, my general feelings are the same as you, Louis. I mean, those all look very good predictions to me. I'm not so sure about the Reading. We'll come on to that in a minute. But yeah, certainly the others all make sense to me. And Cole RFC says, how many more players do you expect to arrive this summer? I'm going to say 3.
I'd be happy with 2. Striker and a central midfielder.
Mark?
Yeah, I was going to say 2.
Yeah, 2 to 3 seems to be the... unless, of course, anyone goes. Scott from the States. Gents, it can be argued Reading were a mid-table side last season except for 3 things. Number 1, Adel Habsi's clean sheets, the second most in the championship, and his shot-stopping. 2, Jan Kernbiet's 19 goals, which was a career high. And number 3, 12 penalties awarded, the most in the championship, and the fact we scored most of them on the rebound. Habsi's gone, Kerman gets injured, and a year older, and the last one seemed to involve a good deal of luck. Can the rest of the squad improve enough in the second year of Stam's system to make up for these losses?
Well, Kermigant's 19 career goals, you could argue that Mendes might be able to step up and pick up 4 of those, including what he got last year. And any young players might come through and pick up a couple of goals as well. Al Habsi, he did win a couple of games for us, there's no doubt about that. But as we talked about, Vito Minnelli might be just as good or better, fingers crossed. And the penalties, I mean...
We're never going to get that lucky on rebounds again.
The rebounds ain't going to happen, no. But I think there's a good chance we win that many penalties again next year because we have so much possession and pressure around the box. And I think there's a correlation between that.
He also says, looking forward to riding along on another season of the podcast. Well, good to have you along for the ride as well, Scott. Jack Killick, with Aaron Tischbowler and Michael Hector now completing loan moves away from their current clubs, do you think Reading cashed in on them at the right time? I was so shocked to see Tish step down to League One. Surely he's better than that. Yeah, he's gone to MK Dons. Real tough lessons there for Mr. Tischbowler after proclaiming he was ready for bigger things and going out to Villa after turning down Norwich last season. All gone a bit Pete Tong.
Yeah, and he looked good at Villa for the first few weeks there. I seem to remember last season. Looked like he was going to be in the first team a lot and then just is sunk immeasurably.
Yeah, he signed Di Matteo and Clark and they didn't last very long and Steve Bruce just never took to him. Johnny, do you think we cashed in at the right time?
Oh, yeah, I think we definitely did. I mean, you can go back and listen to podcasts. I was never the biggest believer in Tischbowler. And, I mean, you look at something like Tischbowler going to Aston Villa for whatever it was, 5 million. I mean, equally around that time, you had rumours that Jake Cooper would be off to Bournemouth for a similar amount. So, you know, sometimes as a buying club, you take that risk. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Obviously, in the case of Jake Cooper, you know, Millwall have waited a year, 2 divisions apart, and got him a lot cheaper. You know, you cannot judge how good a player is going to be after sort of, you know, 6 or 7 games. I mean, I think everyone thought when Tischbowler came in, he improved our team that much. He didn't. The results with and without Tischbowler were not that different. But because he's, you know, a young and a Reading prospect, you get more excited about him. Naturally.
I would have liked to see him stay. I'd like to see him come back. But there does seem to be the suggestion of a bit of an attitude issue. Just in the way he left the club last summer sort of said enough. I mean, I don't know the guy. Not saying he's a troublemaker or anything like that. But for whatever reason, I think, you know, Forest haven't wanted him back. Reading haven't wanted him back. He's ended up at the Milton Keynes Dons. So interesting to see how he gets on. Michael Hector, we touched on that earlier. He's joined Hull. I think nobody thought he was going to make it at Chelsea. Too young, too fast. I'm just slightly surprised that he's someone like a Brighton or a Huddersfield haven't taken a punt. I'm surprised he's back in the Championship because that seems like what more has he got
back
to learn?
Back to square one, isn't
he? Yeah, it seems very much like what happened to Chalobah. You know, he ended up back at Reading in the Championship.
There was quite a good video that Hull did actually with Hector, where he had to name, I think, all 12 clubs he's been on loan at.
Excellent. Dundalk and teams like that.
Bracknell Town, isn't it?
If that's not a sort of self-referential moment of think about what you've done.
Bit meta, isn't it?
Good fees got for them anyway. So thanks for the question, Jack. And Felix says, what's a realistic expectation for the season, both in terms of finishing position in the league and improvement in the quality of play? I wanted to end on this, just because it leads into nicely. I said we're not going to do too much, you know, preview-wise and give too many expectations, but just before we get into the QPR game, what is your gut feelings on Reading so far this season? If I gave you a tenner and said you had to put a bet down now, where would you say Reading are going to finish?
Fifth.
Fifth? Mark?
Still expect us. Yeah, I'd say playoffs again, sixth. I'd say I said second at the end of last season, and now I'm probably scaling that down to sixth or seventh.
I'm saying eighth based on what we've got now. But based on what I think we'll do, I would expect us to challenge for the top six, but probably still finish eighth anyway. So anyway, as I said, don't worry, we'll be getting to full previews, and obviously up on thetullsn.com, you'll be able to read our thoughts, and you'll be able to give your predictions as well this week as well. So do keep checking back there. Anyway, wrap up the show. It's been a long one. Hopefully you're still along for the ride. Some very quick thoughts on this weekend's opener at QPR, and then we'll ride off into the sunset.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Mark, Loftus Road, trip to QPR. First of all, I'm shocked that this isn't on the telly, as this does seem to be a favourite one of the TV companies. But for once, this game is not being broadcast. Unless, of course, you live abroad. In which case, you can watch loads of games now on the iFollow service. So, rules in exile, you're in luck. For the rest of us, unfortunately, it means a trip to West London if we want to see this one. QPR, if we talk about Reading having an unspectacular summer, QPR have had a miserable summer. They have, I think they've signed one player.
On a free transfer.
Yeah.
From Barnsley.
Certainly the days of them signing...
Christoph Samba for 12.5 million.
They are long gone. The Harry Redknapp reign, since gone.
I have no sympathy for their fans.
That's the QPR of old. Ian Holloway trying to assemble a squad there. They finished the season miserably, Johnny. They should be, you know, the fans we've spoken to, both the site and anecdotally that I've spoken to, they're all saying, we just want 21st. Mm. But is this a game where Reading need to win to lay down a real marker, or would you be happy with a point?
I think we need to win. Two main reasons. One, like I said, that playoff hangover. You need to really show that you are over it and ready to go for this season if we harbour serious ambitions of proving that last year wasn't a fluke. And I think secondly, this is a team that, you know, certainly on paper, we will say later in the season, this is a team we should be beating. You know, the QPR fans that we've spoken to for this in their own words piece, he said he'd be happy with 21st. And so I think, you know, when we think of ourselves as potentially a playoff team, potentially a promotion team, it doesn't matter if it's the first game or the last game, you've got to go into this game saying this is a team we should beat.
Did we win there last year?
No, the last two have been 1-1 draws at QPR.
Yeah,
and
I believe so.
1-0 home defeats.
Yeah, so I think we'll draw 0-0 because we do tend to follow a pattern against QPR, don't we? No matter what they're doing, we always kind of play the same way against them.
Yeah, I can see this one ending up as a 1-1 draw.
I think, I'd take a 1-1 draw because ultimately, you know, what you don't want to do is start off your season with a defeat. But I do think that if we want to show the intention and show that, you know, everything is ready to rock again, then it's a game you should be winning. I think you'll look back in a couple of months and think we should have won that game.
Yeah, I remember when we lost at Cardiff to Walsall. I think we started the season with a win at Blackpool. Mm. And that give you that really sort of lift as like, right, it's okay, we're going again. Mm. Whereas, you know, when we lost to Swansea, I think we drew, didn't we? But 2-2 with Millwall, with Monse grabbing...
Matteo Monse, yeah.
Grabbing the beast. Grabbing a couple of goals, and then we went on a fairly miserable run. I think we only won one out of the next
lost
five.
To Barnsley and teams.
Yeah, it was miserable.
I think the other thing is, as well, is if you look at our first two home games, we've certainly not been handed the best cards in terms of the first two home games. What with Fulham and Villa, who, if you believe the bookies, are the two favourites to go up. So, again, if you want to go into that game with a bit of positive momentum, then you need to be looking at getting a good result.
Okay, well, let's put money where the mouth is then. Mark, I'm springing this on you now, but you are now an official entrant into the Tarlhurst Prediction League, which conveys great responsibility and pressure. Are you ready for this?
For the first official prediction?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to have to go with the 0-0 that I said a minute ago.
Okay. Johnny, have you won the prediction? Did you win the Prediction League 2 years ago?
I did win the Prediction League 2 years ago, and I think Westy... No, not Westy.
Handbags won it last year.
It wouldn't be Westy. He's poor at predicting. Hi, Westy. Hope you're listening. I'll go for a 2-0 win to Reading.
2-0 win to Reading. I shall go for that aforementioned 1-1. And we will get Westy's prediction, Handbags' prediction, and our new Tullison Podcast Extra co-host, who I'm not naming yet. Why don't we keep it a surprise? He will be making his prediction.
We can do
as well.
One of those like official unveilings like the club have been doing.
Absolutely.
Get him to score a goal on FIFA as himself.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe if the Patreon campaign funds go through the roof, I'll have the time to do that.
Make him make himself on FIFA and get him score.
Absolutely. Anyway, so yeah, keep an eye on that. The Prediction League, for everyone out there listening, that will be back on the Tarleton website as well. Chance for you to win some Tarleton merch as well at the end of the season. So enter that week in, week out. But gentlemen, thank you very much. It's been a bumper show. We've had a lot to discuss. We're after our lazy little 6 to 8 weeks off. So hopefully you're still with us. As mentioned, we'll be back next week to discuss that win over QPR. The podcast extra will start up again a couple of weeks later. In the meantime, if you do want more content, we have loads up on thetarleton.com. As Johnny mentioned, we've got the previews in their own words. I think we've got about 95% of the championship giving their views. We've got position previews. I've got an opinion piece up on why I think we've got a hangover coming from the playoffs. Lots of bits and pieces. We have those podcast episodes. We've got the interviews with Joby McEnough, DJ Megaparty, and Charles Watts as well. So more content than you can shake a stick at. And if you like what we do, patreon.com/thetarleton. I've been Dan Wimbush. That was Johnny Williams. That was Mark Mayo. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, let's get 3 points to start the season. Come on, you Arse. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. Funny how they always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. People when it seems there's a hill trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You smile, you smile.
Tarlehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlehurstend.com.